Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Dom Giordano on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
It is Dom time. Welcome in. Bringing you really tremendous people each and every day. Big issues, big guests. And I had so much reaction to Dr. Paul Offit last week. Over the years, he's been on my show and he's written some great books on vaccines and the like. He's the head of infectious diseases at the world famous, and rightfully so, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And we just wanted to get an update as we see things developing, and they are pretty rapid. And I had a few areas to ask him about. Dr. Paul Offit, back with us on Talk Radio 1210. Hey, Dr. Paul, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning, Dom.
Well, given your expertise, particularly, I'm not sure day-to-day if you would deal with something like this, but with vaccines, vaccinations, I mean, you are in the center ring on that and all the procedures that go into it. Today, New York is starting these clinical trials on these drugs that seem to have some efficacy when it comes to the coronavirus. And I don't know if you saw this, but the Wall Street Journal had these two docs who are pretty prominent talking about they're using these drugs in treatment of patients. I thought they were very balanced, but they're trying to be hopeful that there might be something here. So tell us first, clinical trials in New York, what does that mean?
Well, remember, if you're sick, in this case, sick with coronavirus, one of three things can happen. You can do better, you can do worse, or you can do the same. The reason we test drugs is you want to make sure they don't take people who are going to do better or stay the same and make them worse. That's why you test them. So I think when doctors say they're just going to use this drug, when that hasn't been properly tested yet, they're making a mistake and they shouldn't be allowed to do it. And frankly, to be honest with you, hydroxychloroquine, which, as you know, is an anti-malaria drug,
yes,
works in theory or could work in theory by changing the so-called pH or acid environment of a cell, and that may make it more difficult for coronavirus to reproduce itself. I honestly think that's probably the least likely drug strategy to work. I mean, there are two other antiviral drugs out there. One's called remdesivir, another one's called flavipiravir, that I think are far more promising and far more likely to work just because biologically they make much more sense. But again, it's all testable. We don't have to look to the gods to figure out whether or not these drugs work. We can test them formally, give them to people or don't give them to people who have similar degrees of illness and see whether they work.
Okay, the pushback would say, though, that the possibilities of difficulties, side effects, and the like with this, they seem to think are not overwhelming. But is that a bad science to say that?
They don't know. I mean, that's why it is that you do the testing.
Okay.
I mean, you can't, you know, the history of medicine is littered with tragedies like this, where you think you're doing good and then you do harm. And it's just, so I think we should be humble as physicians that when there's something that's promoted, that you test it first, because your job is the first for your patients is to do no harm. And if this drug could potentially hurt you, because all drugs have side effects.
Yeah,
any
sure.
drug that has a positive effect has a negative effect. If it doesn't have a negative effect, it probably never had a positive effect. So make sure you're not hurting your patient.
And how long would a clinical trial take, given the backdrop of this? Does that change, or is a clinical trial a clinical trial and there's certain protocols and that's what it is?
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, they're now about 1% of the population has been infected with this virus. So about 35,000 people in a population of 330 million. About 500 have died. which again, in a population of 330 million is not a huge number, but obviously for those who suffered this, it is a big number. I think it wouldn't take that long in the scheme of things to identify an area, for example, where there's an outbreak, like in New York, for example, or Washington State, you know, a few weeks ago. And then you're going to have a lot of patients that come into an adult hospital and then see whether or not that it's of value. But, you know, I think it's a doable trial and could actually be done relatively quickly and efficiently.
Last week, you surprised me. I'm not sure if you were surprised, and I was surprised when you said you would not have shut down the schools. Have you been consistent with that? And I guess that would mean you would reopen them. March 30th is the date of this two-week trial around this. What would you do?
Yeah, actually, interestingly, I don't think the CDC ever formally recommended shutting down schools. You know, the fear, obviously, is you don't want children to get sick. On the other hand, it appears that when they get sick or when they come in contact with this virus, they are either asymptomatic or mildly symptomatic. I mean, that's not the group that dies. And in addition, you could argue that because they get mild illness or at worst that they and then have immunity, that they sort of put a moat around their grandparents who when they get sick would have a problem. So the more people that are become immune to this virus, the better off we are in this country, because that's probably the best way to limit spread absent a vaccine. I mean, once we have a vaccine, then it's a different story.
So we would let them go to school, but maybe keep them away from the grandparents for a while. Is that the two-pronged strategy?
Exactly, because remember, when they're not in school, where are they? They home.
Right.
They're home, where they're more likely to be home around their grandparents. That's exactly right, Don.
All right. Well, that makes a lot of common sense to me. Do you see, though, are you talking to people that I talk with you about this, doctor? Because that's common sense, and I think that would relieve some things that are going on here.
Yeah, and I think that the tone of the conversation is starting to change. I think now we're finally realizing that there is a second wave, if you will, of a public health disaster. This virus obviously is a public health disaster. I mean, it's causing people to suffer and be hospitalized and occasionally to die. But by shutting down everything, by shutting down schools and essentially shutting down all businesses, what we're doing is we're creating an enormous amount of joblessness. I mean, you know, Goldman Sachs, I think, estimated that 2.5 million people will lose their jobs this week. Some people have estimated as many as 20% of U.S. task force could lose its jobs, which is 35 million people. I mean, joblessness leads to homelessness. Homelessness leads to things like addiction, domestic abuse, violence, you know, crime, you know, child abuse. That's invariably what happens in major financial downturns. And so I think you need to consider that, too, that the harm that comes with that.
I am considering that, and I'm more in your camp here, the way you're leaning here. But what do we say to those who say the only thing we should be doing is flattening the curve? They're talking about even more draconian measures for another month or so, at least. I'm talking about really excessive stuff.
No, I think we do need to, whatever you want to call it, shelter in place or lockdown, at least while we're in the log phase. And we're in the log phase, meaning we keep seeing this sort of doubling, and we're the curve right now is just a straight line upward. The question is, which of two things is going to happen? Are we going to start to level off as what happened in China, or are we going to keep sort of this straight rocket line upwards, which is what's going on in Italy? I do think that for now, until we start to see the curve starting to shift a little more flattened out, where now we know we're not going to be hurting people or overwhelming the healthcare system, I think for now that makes sense. But I do think you need to keep a careful eye on that curve. And once it starts to flatten out a little bit, then we should start to talk about things like, you know, pulling people back to work and back to school.
Anything that you know on the vaccine front? There's a tremendous area of expertise for you. What are your thoughts about what you're hearing and the hope for that?
I think we can make a successful vaccine. The reason I say that is that, you know, there are four known human coronaviruses. They've been around. We've identified them ever since the 1960s. And what studies have done, which were done decades ago, showed that if you're infected with one particular type of human coronavirus, you're then protected against that particular type for years. That's a very good sign. If natural infection can protect against disease associated with reinfection, that means you can make a vaccine. The other thing we know is that the part of the virus that attaches to cells is that surface glycoprotein. Therefore, if you can make antibodies directed against that surface glycoprotein, you can protect against disease. So now we have a trial that's already going on with the vaccine. It's a so-called mRNA vaccine. It's made by Moderna. mRNA just stands for messenger RNA. So you inject this messenger RNA, which then gets translated to this protein that sits on the surface of coronavirus, but it's just the protein. And then you make an antibody response, which in theory could protect you. But again, when Dr. Fauci says we're 12 months, 18 months away, I think that's very optimistic. You want to make sure that the vaccine is safe and that it works, and that takes time. I mean, you know, I was fortunate enough to work with a team at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia that created the rotavirus vaccine. It took us 26 years to do that. So wow. I think you should be careful about how long this might take.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you mentioned that. When I think of I have a story in front of me here today, a local broadcasting legend, Harry Donahue, who contracted polio as a child. And the decisions his parents made, he's fine now, later life, but versus some of the panic that's here. And I just think of the people that invented the vaccine that stopped polio, essentially. These are people we don't honor enough, and I know that's in your wheelhouse. Who would you say, other than the ones that I know, is there somebody you have admiration for what they've done? I wanted to end with a positive thing here to be thinking about. Because of what they created. Who is it you admire?
Well, it's Marie Silliman. I mean, just, you know, as a Philadelphian, although he grew up in Montana, his work was all done here. He was a man who made, either did the primary research or development on 9 of the 14 vaccines that we currently give to children. To me, he is the father of modern vaccines. And I think his legacy is that, you know, hundreds of thousands of lives are saved, you know, or millions of lives are saved every year because of what he did. Marie Silliman is my hero.
Great field to be in, Dr. Offit, and it's an honor to know you and to have you on the show.
Thanks, Tom. Take care.
Tom Giordano, weekdays 9 till noon on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly!